Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Folks, I think, hope that we could completely transform Washington. I understand that impulse. There are some very good people here, some good public servants who work very hard. There are some folks who aren't so good. The culture here is not always real healthy. And so bringing about change in terms of how the legislative process operates, in terms of the power that lobbyists have. Power
that's special... enough already. Last night, the president went on a comedian's show. He didn't even get a subservient reception that he was hoping for. Can you imagine they can't even manipulate a third-rate comedian? Even a third-rate comedian put Obama on the defensive and made the president sound uncomfortable. Now, this is not a good sign. It's not good for America. When you see a desperate president where even a comedian and the unknown writers can manipulate him and make him look bad, when a president is willing to sit down with unknown bloggers, when he's facing massive electoral defeat for his party, he is going to become more defensive and more dangerous than he is now. I'm warning you that even if the Republicans can take back both the House and the Senate, which I still doubt they can do, Obama will still have vast presidential powers at his command and never forget it. And he, let us say, has an instinct towards totalitarianism in that he studied with people who admired totalitarian regimes such as the ex-Soviet Union, as I proved over and over again. He still has command of the entire FBI, the CIA, the Justice Department. He still owns all the ACLU lawyers. He still has George Soros in his corner. Now remember, a president so backed into a corner could do even more damage to the Constitution than the high-flying, overconfident Obama we've gotten used to in the last 2 years. And I don't want you to forget this for 1 minute. This is the same president who said there must be a civilian national security force just as strong, just as well-funded as the U.S. military. But there is another possibility. Obama is now facing a nation that opposes his naked Marxism, thanks to my book, Trickle Up Poverty. The independent voters who put him in power because they were fed up with Bush and the K Street gang, and even his own left-wing base are turning against him. But the puppet masters of the Democrat Party want to maintain power at all costs. If this means that they must ease Obama out of the presidency, their once convenient tool, I believe they will do so. Do you believe that Obama will serve out his term? There are reports coming out now from strange websites saying that they're going to declare that he's incompetent and have him dismissed from the office. I don't know if this can be done or will be done. But if you remember, a year ago, I told you it has been done in other countries, and it's usually done from within their own within the party of the person himself. We go back to England. It's the beginning of World War II, and England is facing Germany, an increasingly powerful Germany, a Germany who built up its air force, etc. And they have in office a leader who is extremely weak-kneed, an appeaser. And his own party, the labor movement, the Labor Party, moves to dismiss the then leader of England, saying that he would not be a good wartime prime minister. And they throw him out, and in comes Winston Churchill to save England. I had said at that time that I think there's every reason to believe that the Democrat Party, the old boys in the Democrat Party who control it, will come one day to understand what most of America now understands. When they finally lift their beaks out of the wells they've been drinking from, so to speak, to use a Godfather analogy, and they look around and see the devastation that this far-left radical has wrought upon their own party, since they don't care about America, that's obvious, but they certainly care about their own party. When they see what this amateur has done to their own party's fortunes, they're going to move to get him out of office. And I believe that they will do so with a process that is perfectly constitutional, which is have him removed for incompetence. Because there's no question that we have the most incompetent president in American history. How else do you explain the man going on a comedian show and getting beaten by a third-rate comedian who uses lines written for him by unknown writers? Anyway, I think I've made my point. There's no direct question. I am the underdog in the major media, Michael Savage. Make no mistake about it. I am the underdog versus the lapdogs. That's right. That's how I've defined myself finally. It's taken me a while to come to it. But the underdog versus the lapdogs is how I define my place in the American media landscape. How else do you explain that the American people have rushed out to buy my book without a drop of promotion in the mainstream media? How is it possible? And the answer is because the truth will always be listened to, the truth will always be found. But more than that, America has always had a romance or a love affair with the underdog, and they know I'm the underdog. Speaking of lapdogs, Bush's new book is out. It's not exactly War and Peace. We're calling it Snore and Appease. I also believe that numerology is at work in this election. Let me explain. Those of you who are into numbers and numerology, 37 Senate seats and 37 governors are up for election. I said, wait a minute, let me read that again. 37 Senate seats and 37 governors are up for election. That's very interesting. And then I look and I see that a certain somebody has a 37-point plan to save America. I said 37, 37, 37. The numbers are lining up. Now, if I were playing lotto, I think I'd bet 37, 37, 37 or something like that tonight. But I'm telling you, there's something odd. 37 Senate seats up for grabs. 37 governors are up for election. And I have a 37-point plan for America, beginning with English only, close the borders, defend the borders, defund Obamacare, reduce the size and scope of government, liquidate TARP, get oil for every illegal here, strike down the Anchor Babies law, export jailed illegal aliens, fire Janet Napolitano, use profiling to prevent terror attacks, name the enemy, rewrite the rules of engagement for our troops, save the Navy SEALs, reinforce the military infrastructure, give a pay raise for actual combat troops, silence the Hitler of Iran, impose tariffs on China, offer health savings plans, institute a flat tax, keep the estate tax at zero, say no to the VAT tax, reduce pay and pensions for civil servants, defend the Defense of Marriage Act, encourage childbearing among tax-paying citizens, make abortions illegal, end affirmative action, limit welfare benefits, voting reform, boot out the czars, put the brakes on GM, reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act, reinstitute the Wall Street uptick rule, privatize the regulation of Wall Street, encourage risk-taking and entrepreneurship, 36, institute tort reform, that means cripple the tort lawyers, 37, run the country like a business, not an empire, 37 points, all in trickle-up poverty, and you think that it's all hype? You think he's full of hope and I'm full of hype? You got it just backwards, my friend. There are 37 Senate seats and 37 governorships are up for election. Michael Savage has 37 points to save America. We're open for business. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. And we got plenty of news for you, too, on top of it all. This just came out. Should I throw it all out in the opening? A Saudi prince has appealed for the movement of the Ground Zero Mosque. You heard me right. It's no longer the American nationalists and fair-minded Americans everywhere who say, get that damn mosque out of Ground Zero. It doesn't belong there. It's a victory mosque. It's an insult. And don't give the Islamists another foothold on our society. Now it's a Saudi prince who has aided the imam spearheading a proposed Islamic center near Ground Zero, is appealing for another site not associated with the wound of the September 11 attacks, a report said today. In an interview published by the Dubai-based Arabian Business Magazine, Prince Al-Walid bin Ta'alal was quoted as saying that moving the planned mosque and other facilities would respect the memory of those killed in the 01 attacks and allow American Muslims to choose a more suitable location. So Mayor Bloomberg is not only on the wrong side of this issue, He is so on the wrong side of history that even a Muslim Saudi prince understands that America is moving to the right. America will have its day in the sun again, and this mosque will never see the light of day at ground zero. Now you can play some music. How about playing the Marine Corps hymn? That might work. That might work. Or the Washington Post, if you want. The Washington Post March. Not the newspaper Washington Post song. Because we don't play the Internacional on the Savage Nation. It is a good day to be an American. When we see the worst president in American history groveling before a 10th-rate comedian from Queens, New York, we know that we're on the ascent and the communists are on the descent in the United States of America. I really mean that. I sincerely mean that. How else do you explain this president debasing himself and the presidency in front of a 10th-rate comedian? I don't know how you explain it any other way. Play the music. Forget what I'm saying. Here in San Francisco, we got the World Series. I asked somebody why they're not interested in the World Series, and she said to me, how come they don't look heroic? What happened to the ball players? She said, what's with the long hair hanging over there? That's so out of fashion, except amongst white trash. What's with the hair over the collar? I mean, no one wears hair like that anymore, except basically. I mean, who wears hair like that? I don't even see anybody wearing it anymore. Even Charlie Sheen cuts his hair, and look how low he is, for God's sakes. But here in the San Francisco Bay Area, the newspaper has gotten so illiterate. The level of illiteracy has reached a new low. I want you to read you a headline that you're not going to believe the writing, if I could only find it again. There's so much I have to remember. I can't find it. It's so illiterate, I can't remember it. Well, here it is. Rain now expected to hold off for game two. Now, if I were a seventh grade teacher in English composition, I'd give the person an F. Rain now expected to hold off for game two. Folks, that's illiterate. Everything about it is wrong. It was written by a Trapper Byrne for the San Francisco Chronicle. Rain now expected to hold off for game two. I guess they don't even go to English composition anymore in San Francisco. Jerry Brown jumps to 10-point lead. Now, why is Meg Whitman in California falling behind after she spends $120 million of her own money? Can anyone answer that question? How even a retread like Jerry Brown, who was California's worst governor in history, is now ahead of Meg Whitman, who spent $120 million of her own money? There's a few simple answers. Meg Whitman spent $120 million thinking that the people were idiots. But she will not take any position except middle-of-the-road positions. She's doing exactly what the Republicans have done wrongly for a long time now. She is not paying any attention whatsoever to the Tea Party base, the conservative base, as it were, in the state of California. And they're just not interested in the W.C. Fields look-alike in a skirt. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Three coins in the fountain, each one seeking happiness.
The song is dedicated to Bonnie Frank and his friends in Massachusetts.
Hopeful lover.
All the folks in Boston who like cannelloni. I haven't eaten cannelloni since I was 17 years old. Last night I made lamb chops. I went off my diet lately. I'm so tense from the election. I know that Obama's going to get so mean after the election that I started to eat everything that's not on my diet anymore. I mean, what's the point? Oh, let's take the calls. No, really, it's very serious. The 37 Senate seats, 37 governorships are up for election. I have 37-point plan for America. I knew when I said this on the air we'd get these calls, and now we've got numerologists calling. Ohio, Gary, you're a numerologist. What does the 37 mean?
37 basically is it goes in cycles, and 37 is the 13th prime number. So that is of great importance to the people in power, because they do everything by 13. Team called the 76ers, 7 plus 6 equals 13. Team called the 49ers, 4 plus 9 equals 13. You see M's all over society. M is the 13th letter alphabet. McDonald's.
Oh, wait, I'm missing something. 37 is related to 13 how? 13 prime?
It's a 13th prime number.
Explain what that means to the average listener who never went past graduate school.
Well, basically, you got prime numbers. They're only divisible by the number and the number one, themselves and the number one. And a lot of people don't understand the energy. Basically, it's all vibrational energy, Dr. Savage. Last time.
No, this is fascinating to me because numerology is not quite as well respected or understood as it is in some societies. The Chinese people are very deeply into numerology. Many Orthodox Jewish people are very heavily into numerology. In fact, they have broken down the words of God into numbers, incidentally, as you may know. And, of course, all of our algorithms are based upon numbers, are they not?
I agree 100%.
People don't realize that the computer speaks in numbers, not in letters. So what do the numbers 30? What does the number 37 stand for in your mind?
Number 37 in my mind stands for perfection. It's all the combination of the numbers going together. They say the number of God is 7. So you have that 37.
I hate to bring it back to me, but I can't help it. When I wrote a 37-point plan to save America in the back of trickle-up poverty, I did not know that 37 Senate seats and 37 governorships were up for election. I really didn't know that. I just learned it today. So this 37 has some kind of deeper meaning.
Of course.
And I believe numerology is at work in this election in some way, and I don't know how.
Dr. Savage, just to emphasize your point of how different governments use numerology around the world, the Chinese, they started their Olympic Games on 8-8-2008. Now, if you add everything up, 8 plus 8 plus 2, 0, 0, 8 equals 26, 2 plus 6 equals 8. Now, here's the kicker. They started the games at 8:08 p.m. Numerology
yes.
always at work, Mr. Dr. Savage. Last
yes.
time we talked
yes.
about 10
yes.
months ago, I started talking to you about all the 11s in society. 9/11, Madrid, 3/11. Now, since we last talked, there's been an awful lot of 11s that popped up in society during terror attacks.
Well, hold on, Gary, now you've got my interest even more so than the initial throwaway 37. I'd like you to tell me what's coming up on November 11th.
Savage.
Hey, Millie, listen, Mike's back. He's back. Quick, listen. Quick, turn it off. Turn it up again, Mike. Mike's back. Millie, Mike's back.
Oh, my God. Well, here we are. Are we in November yet? No, Monday's November 1st. Election Day is November 2. We can't imagine what November 2 is going to be like at night when we see the union stealing one election after another and the machines being rigged. We learned today that the Chinese, I'm almost afraid to tell you this one. J. Alex Haldeman is an assistant prof of engineering and computer science at the University of Michigan. And his resume includes hacking into voting machines in the name of exposing security flaws, right? He does it supposedly to find out if he can get into machines. While he was in control of certain voting machines in the District of Columbia, he observed that the voting machines were being attacked by computers originating in Iran and China. And he said these attackers in China and Iran were attempting to guess the same master password that we did. And since it was only 4 letters long, they would likely have soon succeeded. That's very nice to hear that the Chinese and the Iranians are able to hack into our election computers. It's not bad enough that the unions can do so, like slot machines. Gary in Ohio, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Well, they already own Obama, so what's the difference? But my point about the numerology, I want to stress this about the number 11. If you recall in history, Dr. Savage, the first major terrorist event in world history happened on 9/11/1972 when 11 Israeli athletes were murdered at the Olympic Games. Now, you jump 29 years, 29, 2 plus 9 equals 11, you have 9/11 happen. I already talked about a long time ago how the World Trade Centers look like side-by-side, look like an 11. 9 plus 1 plus 1 equals 11. The first flight to hit the World Trade Center was Flight 11. But let's go a little deeper into history, Dr. Savage. On 11/11/1918, they decided to sign the Versailles Treaty, ending World War I. Here's the kicker. For all the people who doubt numerology and doubt the governments around the world use it, They signed it at 11 o'clock on 11-11.
Right, and this November 11th, of course, is Veterans Day in honor of the end of World War I. So that's what you're saying. Okay, but governments then use numerology. Let's come up to the date. This is shocking and very interesting, Gary. Keep on the, stay on the roll.
Okay, let's go from here. I just want to show how governments around the world use people with certain birthdays of the number 11 to lead. Let's start with Barack Obama, who's born 8-4-1961. Add everything up, 8-4-1961, adds up to 29, 2 plus 9 equals 11. His wife, Michelle Obama.
Whoa, you lost me there. Eight what?
Barack Obama's born 8-4-1961. So if you add everything up, 8 plus 4 plus 1 plus 9 plus 6 plus 1 adds up to 29, 2 plus 9 equals 11.
Wait, 8 plus 4, wait, you 8-4-1961. 8 plus 4 is 12 plus what?
Plus 1 plus 9 plus 6 plus 1.
Okay, plus 1 plus 9 plus 6 plus 1 equals what?
29, 2 plus 9 equals 11.
Oh, my God.
That's his life path number. Now, let's go to Bill Clinton, who's born 8-19-1946. You add everything up, 8 plus 1 plus 9 plus 1 plus 9 plus 4 plus 6 adds up to 38, 3 plus 8 equals 11. It's not just on the Democratic side, it's on the Republican side, too. Sarah Palin is born on the 11th. John McCain is born on the 29th. Ronald Reagan himself, who used an astrologer in the White House, is an 11 life path, too. I'm just showing you, just in America, American politics, how one number is always prevalent.
You have my apt attention.
If you go to places around the world, Tony Blair, 5-6-1953, again, adds up to 29, 2 plus 9 equals 11. So what I'm trying to show you is the personality profile of how the elite select leaders. Because I'm telling you, Dr. Savage, I really believe leaders are not elected, they're selected. That's just my personal view on things.
That's chilling. So let's say we do numerology on other. Thank God my numbers don't add up to 11. I'd be frightened.
You add up to a 5 life path. That's why you're very open-minded, even though people don't understand that about you. Most of the top talk show hosts are 5 life paths like you. The wall banger, the hemorrhoid, how you like to call them, they all have the same numerology number as you.
You're telling me the hemorrhoid and I share something in common? We add up to fives?
Yes, not only you and a hemorrhoid, the wall banger too. They're all 5 life paths. Now, give me another
example. But do you think that the golfer uses a 5 iron exclusively?
No. The golfer, the funny thing about Rush is he's born on the same day as Howard Stern, and they're the top two talk show hosts in the past 20 years.
That is amazing that you do. How do you figure this out? But if I'm I'm the number 3 top talk show host in the United States, and my numbers are nowhere near 11.
Well, you don't want to be the 11th guy. You're doing quite fine as you are, because you don't have any.
How do you say I add up to a 5?
Okay, let's take your birthday. 3, it's going to add up to 23. 2 plus 3 equals 5.
Wait, 3 plus 31 is 34.
No. 3 plus 3 plus 1. It's not.
Okay, 3 plus 3 is 6 and 1 is 7. And 42 is 49. Oh, or you get 7 plus 4 using your model. 7 plus 4 is 11 plus 2 is 13.
No. Okay, let's do this real simple, because I don't want to waste your time doing this on there.
No, you're not. I mean, I know that many people listening to this right now are fascinated, because this is new. It's interesting.
But it's 3 plus 3 plus 1, which is 7, plus 1 plus 9 plus 4 plus 2, which is...
Wait. You're 3 plus 3 plus 1 is 7. Then what?
Then 1.
Oh, 1 plus 9 plus 4 plus 2.
Now that adds up to 23, and 2 plus 3 again adds up to 5. Let me give you more examples. Take you in a different...
Hold it. All right. So let's say a person's number is 5 by your analysis. 5 stands for openness?
5 stands for... For open-mindedness, they'll travel. They can't sit still. They're always got to be doing something. Travel. That's one of the big things with 5 life paths. Whether they like it or not, they're going to travel their whole lives. And that goes.
Oh, I hate traveling, and yet I keep doing it against my will.
That goes for anyone born on the 5th, 14th and 23rd, because 1 plus 4 equals 5 and 2 plus 3 equals 5. I'm telling you, this is a sign that people have to understand because it works.
How long am I going to live?
I don't go into that. Come on, Dr.
You see, every fortune teller I've ever gone to, it's all I ever wanted to know. What?
You know,
I once had an American Indian read my palm. I'll never forget this as long as I live. I was in the, I believe it was called the Kiwi Bar on Houston Street in Manhattan. And I'm going back to the early, mid-60s when I was, you know, somewhat of a college bar fly, hanging out in the, you know, the West Village, enjoying myself a little too much. And it was a kind of wild bar, the Kiwi Bar. I think it was on Greenwich. I don't know where it was. I think it was Houston Street. It's a real dive. And it had, you know, that what's that stuff on the floor that they used to throw around? Like, it looked like hay, Excelsior, to attract, you know, to catch the whatever, the spilled drinks. It was a dump, but it attracted interesting people. I'm sitting there talking to a lady from uptown who was very well dressed for some reason. I don't know how we came to talk. And a one of the bohemians does a cartwheel, drunk. His legs smash into the woman, knock her on her butt, off the chair. Her skirts go flying. And he leans over and he bows down to her and he says, "Madam, I am sorry, but if you swim at the fishes, you've got to expect to get wet." And then he walks off stage. I thought that was very interesting. Soon thereafter, I noticed a man with an angular face sitting next to them. And we chatted each other up. It turned out that he was an American Indian. I don't know how it came to it. He said, "I'll read your hand." He read my hand, which I thought was very interesting. And he made certain predictions, which have come to be true many, many years later. Now, do you believe in palmistry as well? Because I know that many devoutly religious people don't believe in any of this.
Well, first of all, let me explain how all this stuff works. Astrology, numerology, tarot cards, palm reading. It basically, if you're doing it correctly, they'll all give you the same answers using different methods.
Well, I'm going to tell you another story, and everyone listening to this show, because I have seen things work in my life. I don't have to read a book to know what's true or false. About 19, I don't even remember the year anymore. The years are a blur. In the 73-74 era, I'm going to the Fiji Islands collecting plants on a regular basis, okay, medicinal plants, looking for cures. On one of these trips, I took a young friend along. Guy comes with me. He was much younger. Well, it wasn't much younger. He was younger, but the guy was sort of an Adonis-like character. Really, I'm saying this for a reason. He was extremely sturdy, like a young pirate, strong as can be. Nothing bothered him. And he was going to be the photographer on this expedition. And he was full of hope and himself. Before we went out into the islands, the out islands, I always used to go to a card reader in Suva. And I can remember it as I'm talking to you to this day. I remember that session. My friend Domenico used to take me to a certain woman who read cards. I hope you're following this. It's a very interesting story to me as it comes back to me. She'd always read the cards before we went out into the jungles and crossed the waters into the many islands that I collected plants on. This was not a snap, slam dunk kind of deal. Anyway, this time she reads my cards and her eyes go cloudy. And I said, "Well, what's the matter?" She said, and Domenico said to me in Fijian, "She doesn't want to tell you your fortune." I said, "Oh, come on." So I said, "All right, how about reading John's fortune?" And he was, you know, smiling. He didn't think anything of this. She reads his fortune. Her eyes go completely dark. And she got up and she excused herself and left the room, which she had never done before. Now, she's an ordinary Fijian woman, but she came from an island that was very well known for the witchcraft in the Fiji Islands. People don't know this, but there are certain island people who have certain powers, and many of them happen to have come from Kandavu at that time. I got to speak with her, and I asked her through my friend, through the interpreter, what she saw. She said, "Your collecting trip will not go well this time." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she said very shyly, she said, "He will become crippled soon upon stepping on the island." I didn't know what to say. So he heard it and he laughed it off. He said, "Come on, stop with the superstition." Fast forward, boat to the out islands. We land on the first island I was going to collect plants that the same week. Within a few minutes of landing on the island, he starts to say his foot is hurting him. He couldn't walk. A few minutes later, he cannot walk on the foot at all. A few minutes after that, he has to be carried. A few minutes after that, he's in distinct pain. Luckily, I always carried a small kit of drugs with me. I intuitively figured it was some kind of, bacterial infection. They may have stepped on something. And I loaded him up with the oral antibiotics. We got him back to the main island, to the hospital, and they said that the antibiotics saved his life. Now, what do you think happened? He was, in addition to being a photographer, this young man said he was a poet. He used to write a lot of poetry at that time. He said he stepped on a ghost, okay, just as a joke. Well, guess what it turned out, what had happened? When we got off the boat on the sandy beach of this island, it turns out that he had stepped in an area that was a burial ground and we didn't even know it. Now, that's on the mystical side, but on the more practical side, there is coral throughout the South Pacific that is highly capable or greatly capable of inducing bacterial infections. So on a simply pragmatic level, he probably stepped on a piece of contaminated coral and got a rapid bacterial infection. So you can answer this from many different levels, mystical, magical, practical. What do you make of the card reader, though, predicting this?
I'm not surprised. First of all, a lot of psychics out there are fake, but there are a few out there, the 10%, the 15% of the minority, that are very good at what they do.
Remember, she didn't do this for any money. She wouldn't even take money. She used to do it for a glass of water. This was her power. This woman didn't even do it for money. Now, I'm bringing it up, Gary, because a lot of people are afraid of astrology, numerology, horoscopes, etc., and they don't believe in it, and they think that it's black magic. But what if it's predictive? Why should we ignore it?
Well, first of all, for all the people who say anything bad about astrology, okay, I'll take that. But no one better say anything bad about numerology, because numbers are all over the Bible. They're all over the Quran. I mean, the distinct numbers, like 33. The Freemason order goes up to 33 degrees. Jesus Christ died when he was 33. Muhammad, the Islamic prophet, was born 330. Again, you have the 33. I mean, it's all over the text, the holy books. People just have to know what to look for.
So by your reckoning, we have an election coming up on 11-2, obviously, which is nothing unusual. And 11-11 is Veterans Day, which is nothing unusual. But you want me to pull the handle on the predictive machine? 11-11-11 has to be a date that we should be very concerned about. Coming up 1 year from the next from next week's Thursday will be 11-11-11. Would you agree that that should be a day that we should be watching?
I would say 11-11 this year, but especially 11-11-2011, where you have all three of the 11s. That day, I can promise you something will happen. Another day
that's right.
To look out for.
That's right. That's like pulling the slot machine on the big handle, of the big slot machine. 11-11-11 is going to be a phenomenal day. Nobody knows what that one's going to be.
And now, just to tell you other points to look for, next year when it's January 11, 2011, I would expect some kind of maybe a terror attack. But just a lot of people are bringing the date up, 2012, the day when they say the Mayan calendar ends. On 12-21-2012. Well, I want everyone to do the math for me, okay? Let's do this real simple. 12-21-2012. 1-2-2-1-2-0-1-2. Again, it adds up to an 11.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm
12-21-12 adds up to an 11? Go ahead, do it again slowly.
Again. 1 plus 2, 2 plus 1, 2 plus 0 plus 1 plus 2 adds up to an 11. 12-21-2012. There's your 11. And if you guys think this stuff happens by chance, you guys are nuts. The elite know something you don't, and they use this on an everyday basis. When I talked to Dr. Savage in the beginning of the year, I talked to him about numerology and 9/11. Let's just look at the events that happened this year.
You've got my attention. We're going to come back to speak with Gary. What's your website? You're going to get flooded, but go ahead. Yeah. Give us your website. Go ahead.
GaryTheNumbersGuy.net or just Google Gary the Numbers Guy.
Stay on the line. We want to hear what's coming here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
How we stumbled into numerology and numbers is at this point bewildering, but we're going back to Gary, the numbers guy in Ohio. Gary, so what's happened on the day of the 11th? Give us the update, the 11th.
Exactly. When I was talking about 9-11, 3-11 in Madrid, I brought up what happened in the past. Let's talk about what's happened just this year on with the 11th, on the 29th, or when the total day adds up to an 11. The oil rig, they exploded in the Gulf of Mexico. off top, 11 people died. That was a sign right there. The miners in West Virginia, 29 miners died. 2 plus 9 equals 11. Obama signed Obamacare. Listen to this, Dr. Savage. He signed it 3/23/2010. 3 plus 2 plus 3 plus 2 plus 0 plus 1 plus 0, again, adds up to an 11. They're using this stuff, Dr. Savage. When Obama signed the stimulus bill in Denver, he signed his name, Barack Obama, 11 letters, with 11 different pens. People can look this information up. They're doing it for ritual purposes. And I want people to understand this. This is not coincidence. There is no such thing as a coincidence.
You know, it's bad enough that I ate a bad salad with goat cheese and I have indigestion. This is really freaking me out.
Well, Dr. Savage, I'm going to send you an email to your producer.
No, I'm not trying to mock you. It's just there's so much of a nightmare coming out of this presidency. Now I have something new to worry about. He's like some supernatural evil character now.
Well, we're going to go through a lot.
Wait. He goes on a comedian show. Tell me who the comedian is then. Do his
birthday. I just do politicians.
Well, nobody knows his birthday because it's not even his name. You have to look.
Care less about those guys. But, you know, whether it comes to sports and Michael Jordan, Jim Brown having the same birthday, LeBron James, Tiger Woods having the same birthday, or it comes to talk radio, how we talked about before, or whether it comes to politics, it's always the same numbers. I want people to study. Don't take my word for it. Go out there. Look at the information, and then come up with an opinion.
Well,
yourself.
I'm going to tell you something else, and I hate to bring it back to it. If you look at the dates that Obama has signed away some of America's national security on his war on the military and national security, I just looked it up in my own book. Some of the dates add up to 11. I'm shocked again. The dates he signed deals with Russia to reduce our nukes. Gary, look it up. I can't believe it.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
My fortune. You've been reading the cards, haven't you?
I've been doing the accounts.
Come on, read my future for me.
You haven't got any.
What do you mean?
Your future is all used up. Why don't you go home?
Unbelievable, A Touch of Evil. If you've ever seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. Orson Welles was astonishing in his use of voice just now. If you actually listened, just the tonality change, the way he changed the syntax, amazing. And we played it only because in the last hour we stumbled upon an issue of numerology, because I said that there are 37 Senate seats and 37 governorships are up for election next Tuesday. And I, Michael Savage, have a 37-point plan for America. And then a numerologist called and we went through a whole number, you know? So here we are. Let's move past the numbers, unless there's one last call on this. Let's get it out of the way, okay? There's such good callers hanging on the Savage Nation. Well, wait, before we leave this, many of you do believe in symbolism, numbers. Some of you don't. You're pragmatists. You don't believe it's all garbage. Let me tell you something. In the Hebrew calendar, there are various and sundry holidays that most of us have never heard of. And they're minor holidays. So one is Kislev 21 in November of 2010. I'm going to read you a paragraph. It's celebrated in the time of the Second Temple as the day of Mount Gerizim. When Alexander the Great conquered the land of Israel in 313 BC, Samaritan enemies of the Jews received his permission to destroy the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. So a head of the Jews, a leader of the Jews, dressed up in his resplendent priestly garments, and he leads a procession of Jerusalem notables to appeal to Alexander the Great to avert the decree to destroy the temple. On seeing the leader, Alexander prostrated himself to the ground, explaining that an identical figure would appear to help him triumph on the battlefield. He then gives the Jews permission to destroy instead the Samaritan heathen temple of Mount Gerizim. So you say symbolism. Don't write it off. Symbolism, numerology, it's very powerful. Now, what does that have to do with the current state of affairs in America? What does it have to do with the fact that a child king is now running this country off the rails? What does it have to do with these things? How did this happen to America? I am not a numerologist. I'm not a palmist. I'm not a crystal ball reader. I can't do it. But I don't think that Obama was elected by chance. I mean, when I say that, I mean, it's obvious he wasn't. Some very powerful world forces put him in power. The question is, how far did they really want him to go? Has he gone as far as they want? I answer that resplendently, no. He has not gone anywhere near where they want him to take this country. Demonic figures, and I can name them, demonic figures who hate our freedoms, want this man to usher in an age of terror in this country, an age of absolute control, an age of despotism unlike any seen in the history of this country. And I don't care how many comedians from Forest Hills say otherwise. I don't care how many junkies from Hollywood say otherwise. I am telling you that America's future hangs like a loose tooth. And it's all going to be decided on Tuesday. At least much of it's going to be decided on Tuesday. Because if the corrupt Democrat Party loses over 50 seats, they will move to evict Obama from the White House one way or the other. They will do so. Because they'll realize, hey, they could care less about the country. That's evident by Nancy Pelosi's behavior. She cares about as much of the country as your dog does. She has as much sense of what America is as a dog does, as far as I'm concerned. She has no sense that there is such a thing as a country. You know what I'm saying? The typical Democrat view, what are you, country? What are you talking about? What are you, some Nazi with a uniform? What do you mean, country? What are you talking about? What are you, some dumb idiot who fights for the country? Morons die for the country. That's how they look upon it. Okay? But they care about their party. They care about the Democrat Party because that's where they get derived their power and their wealth. The two parties care about their parties. And because they care so much about their party, they're going to realize the man has wrecked their party, and they're going to probably seek to remove him based upon incompetence. Period. End of story. That's what I think could happen. Do I know it is? When I read the numbers, I didn't throw any Ouija board here, or I didn't throw any pickup sticks. I don't know what's going to happen. Let's go to the callers. Cincinnati O. Dan, you're next up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Triple up poverty is a masterwork that holds its own with the works of Hayek, Burnham, and all the anti-communism books of the middle of the last century. It's incredible, and I have a question.
That's very... Now, wait a minute. Let me pause. That is very beautiful of you to say, but you know that there's not been but maybe one review on a blog since it came out, which is astonishing when you think about it, isn't it?
It is astonishing. Ted Nugent's review is excellent. And, yes. Yeah, this book holds its own with all of those masterworks, and hopefully it will go down in the future as that. And in the second chapter, you mention the terms Leninism and Trotskyism. Now, I've been doing a little reading of Marx and Engels based on what you recommend in Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. I want to know my enemy. And
right.
I'm still unclear is like the difference between, can you split some hairs here and define Leninism versus Trotskyism and how they both weigh up against Obamaism?
Oh, you have put me on the spot, John. Well, it's a whole chapter. It's not difficult. It's not that easy to just lay out because I thought long and hard on it. Lenin and Marx were early communists, but they differed greatly. I have defined Obama as a pan-Leninist. Do you understand what a pan-Leninist might be?
Yeah, that's where you take, and I'm going to throw the Frankfurt School in here with it. You take, like, minorities, women, what have you, and that is their new proletariat, and it's pan because it's worldwide to where the so-called proletariat or underclass attacks the bourgeoisie, which is regular patriotic Americans, for a
yes.
worldwide type revolution with Obama as the ultimate leader, like, say, as a UN type person. That's
okay, so let me look at a paragraph on page 57 to answer your questions in a simple way. Like its cousin in China, Obama is pursuing more of a neo-communism or soft socialist communist approach. In a way, Obama's using a tribrid revolutionary plan. Some Marxism, some Leninism, and some Trotskyism. And while we don't yet have commissars in America, as are found in communist countries, we do have czars and czarinas. This cadre of like-minded companions shapes the direction of the government without congressional oversight or approval, and is only accountable to Comrade Obama. You would think that the genius comedian would have said one word about it last night, but this jerk grew up in an apartment somewhere in New York where he was fed socialist tripe, which is why he is one. Now, any European with reasonable political knowledge knows what's going on here in America, but I'm afraid that the American voter is terminally naive. How can we explain that 64.6 million sheeple voted him into office? Why were they willing to give Obama the benefit of the doubt in spite of the evidence? That's how I bet. That's how. And I bet they'd refuse to believe what I'm saying about a Barack Obama, even if they were to see him with their own two eyes marching around the White House under a Lenin banner, wearing a Che Guevara shirt and red beret. So what I'm getting at is the socialism that they never taught you in school is what I teach in Chapter 2 in Trickle Up Poverty, in the section called You Say You Want a Revolution. Does that answer any of your questions in any way? Perhaps not.
Yeah, it does. And I got to tell you, for a lot of these sheeple to vote against Obama, it's basically like inviting the cop to the party. That's how brainwashed a lot of these young liberals are. And I tell you, I don't know. He could get reelected, Michael.
How?
Well, some of the people that I listen to, I mean, you try to explain anything to them about Obama. I mean, 2 + 2 = 4, and it's like this slide goes in their brain, and it's like they get this zombie look on their face, and they just want to walk away from you. You know, I'm talking about people that are like 20, 23, 21, you know, really involved in the pop culture. I mean, they probably watched and thought that Obama was just wonderful and can do no wrong, you know, and so...
Well, the comedian is a lapdog of the leftist establishment, and yet he wiped the floor with the so-called leader of the leftist establishment. That is not very good for the comedian. The one good thing to come out of this is now he is now their public enemy number one. The only good thing to come out of it, listen, there is nobody more vicious than a communist towards another communist. And all I can tell you is that the lapdog comedian is now public enemy number one of David Axelrod. I can guarantee it, that they no longer hate Rush Limbaugh as much as they hate this comedian.
I agree with that, and I got to tell you, that's why that business with Juan Williams really disturbed me, because when the lefties start going after each other, they're about to make a heavy move.
Well, they're very desperate right now, and we know that they're desperate by the amount of the number of reports we're getting from around the country on vote rigging, machine rigging, etc. The races are being fixed around America. Now, you combine that with Obama picking socialist czars who have been very quiet recently. You combine that with his saying during the campaign that he wants to create a national private security force just as well-funded, just as large as the U.S. military. And I am sitting here waiting with bated breath for some kind of totalitarian dictum coming out of this this president. It could happen, and it could happen rather rapidly. And I can guarantee you Hollywood would march Sieg Heil right behind him.
I'm sure they would, too. And that's why, ironically, it might be the Democrat Party that doesn't want him to run next time. And the Democrat Party might be destined to collapse in a shambles. I don't know. What do you see?
What, whether the Democrat Party is going to collapse?
Yeah.
Well, only if they lose more than 50 seats will they implode. They will have to stop being pulled to the left by Obama and his radicals. Unless they lose at least 50 seats, they're not going to change course. But remember, it's not so easy to get rid of a man with total power, and he has absolute power, whether people know it or not. He, in fact, has used paraconstitutional methods to force through many of the plans that he's already done. These were not done legitimately. Obama and his minions did one deal after another, almost extra-constitutionally, in one way or another. I believe, though, there's a real counter-revolution going on against this Leninist Marxist revolution coming out of the Obama administration, and that's why the Tea Party movement is picking up steam, and that's why the left is starting to panic. And all you got to do is look at the czars and see what they really want to do and what they've written and what they plan to do. Let me read you something that Vladimir Lenin has said, and I quoted from page 49 of my book. This is Lenin himself, because you asked about Lenin and Trotsky. So I'll give you one little answer. Here's Lenin, what he wrote, his views of the free press. We Bolsheviki have always said that when we reached a position of power, we would close the bourgeois press. To tolerate the bourgeois newspapers would mean to cease being a socialist. When one makes a revolution, one cannot mark time. One must always go forward or go back. He who now talks about the freedom of the press goes backward and halts our headlong course towards socialism. It's eerie. It's eerie. I mean, we were hearing an awful lot about the fairness doctrine when Obama came to power, remember? Both Democrats and Republicans alike were talking about clamping down on free speech on the radio. Suddenly, it went away. Do you think that's really going to go away after Obama sees that he's lost an awful lot of seats because the American people are hearing what he's actually doing, primarily from the internet and talk radio? His enemies are not the people. They know who their enemies are. Their enemies are the internet and the freedom of speech on the radio. Do you think that this power-mad president and his power-mad minions are going to suddenly walk away because they realize that they've lost so many seats? I'll let you decide. I'll be right back. You know, sometimes I wonder if any president or any party can save this country. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I mean, take a look at what we have here. Do you have any idea what we're facing, truthfully? I mean, in serious terms. Let's not play with the numbers anymore, you know. I could take anything right now and teach you that mean everything adds up to 11. S plus O plus R plus O plus S equals 11. I mean, you can, or if you want, plus O plus B plus A from A. If you add it up and twist it around and reduce an M from the A and add a double B, it comes to 11. I mean, like, come on, we can play with that if you want. I'm not mocking the guy who was on, but truthfully, you can almost make it into anything that you want. But take a look at our fiscal mess. It doesn't matter what party you're in. We have a federal debt out of control. We have an unfunded Social Security and Medicare liability situation, unfunded now, that was just compounded by Nancy Pelosi and her hammer. You have state and local government debt not paid for. You have public pension bills. You add them all up, you have many multiples of the U.S. Gross domestic product. So what are we going to do to pay that off? How in the world? Let's start with the obvious. How are the city, states, and local governments ever going to pay these pensions? Now, what are you going to do, say, cut them? Every cop and every fireman, suddenly he worked all of his life. Maybe he has a disability from taking a bullet to save your grandmother going for bread from some thug. You think it's right to cut the guy's pension when he took a low salary his whole life in order to get that pension? It's not that easy to just say cut the pensions. But as sure as I'm standing here, pensions are going to be cut. There's no question about it. I would only start at the top. I'd start by cutting the president's pensions and work our way right down through Congress. Let's start by cutting these lifetime pensions and benefits, and let's make them pay for their medical care like $1,000 a visit. And maybe then they'll come to understand that we, the people, also need some help. 1-800-449-8255. God, the time is just running out here. Arizona, Catherine, quickly, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please, from Arizona. What's on your mind?
Hi, Doctor. Savage, first of all, I love your New York stories. I'm a former New Yorker, and I love to hear them. But my sister and I went to the Scottsdale Barnes & Noble to buy your TUP book.
Yes.
And we got there. The woman said that one guy walked out with 29 copies. So we were out of luck.
It must be the 29 congressmen who are about to lose their seats, the Democrats. They must have bought them. The DNC must have bought the copies to give to the 29 Democrats who are afraid of losing their seats so they could see why people don't like them very much. I don't know who bought them. I certainly don't live in Arizona. God bless whoever did that. But I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Everyone's a winner on this show right through Labor Day. I mean, Election Day. What time is it? What month is it? Wait a minute. I remember now. 9 plus 2 plus 3 plus 1 plus 9 plus 4 minus 4 is 11. That's right. That's all I got to remember.
Savage.
Welcome back to the underdog of the American media, fighting the lapdogs of the American media, Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Visit me online at teddy.com, michaelsavage.com. Teddy and I are friends again. The nip was a complete and total anomaly accident. He's my friend now. even though he looks at the teeth, the indentations in my hand. He shrinks when I hold a hand up to the mouth. He like, you know how dogs, me, I'm sorry. They lean over. I know he didn't mean it. I think he was in a deep sleep, and I approached him wrongly, and he didn't know who I was. That's all. They're dogs. Things happen. You can't get mad at them. They're like people. People make mistakes, too. Anyway, life is but a dream. Let's try to make it a good one on the show today. I sent that to a friend of mine today. I said life is just a long dream. Let's try to make it a nice dream, as nice as we can. You know what I'm saying? Really, at a certain point, it all starts to look dreamlike to me. And it's hard to believe what can happen to you in this life. I told you that, well, why go into this whole thing? You know, we all have ancestors who know what they lived through, whether right here in America. The Dust Bowl, why, that's not real to anyone anymore. All that's real is the slut in Hollywood and the drug addict in the Plaza Hotel vomiting on himself, rolling in glass, saying that he had an allergic attack. That's all, with a $12,000 hooker. I mean, he makes Spitzer look like a piker. I suspect after this, CNN is probably going to offer Charlie Sheen a position on CNN. I read reports, and I don't know whether they can be confirmed or not, is that Spitzer has failed so miserably that CNN has now learned their lesson. They're reaching out to Pee-wee Herman. They're seeing if they can make Pee-wee Herman into a newscaster on CNN. And they're devolving. They keep devolving from Spitzer next. It's Pee-wee Herman. After Pee-wee Herman, they'll go to Sean Penn, who has never said a coherent sentence in his last 50 years. Now hit the gong. Don't say it again. Danny in New York, 1-800. Danny, you know I'm in trouble and a little. I'm a little dazed from a whole month of this politics stuff. And so when we're using gongs, if you hear me start using like today, I started. Oh, come on. Yeah, we'll never forget that one. Only my crew could put together those famous sound bites. You know what my favorite is the when Hillary goes into voices, when she was on the road a couple of years ago and she went into a southern church.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy.
Astounding. Just astounding if you listen to any of this stuff. And that's what makes life interesting, is the ancient Greek philosophers wrote, it's good to live in interesting times. And I thank God that I was born in interesting times, because I've been through it. I mean, I had nothing to do with them, but when you think about what's gone on in the years, for example, that many of you have been alive, you have been living in very interesting times. I once made a list of all the things that have occurred, let us say even from 1950 to now. But I don't have that list, but I do have something cute to read you anyway, just to break up the monotony, where I say what a different world it is today. So much has happened in just two generations. America has gone from Eisenhower to Obama in two generations, from Ben Casey to Nurse Jackie in two generations, from mutual assured destruction to assured national destruction in two generations, from John Wayne to Lady Gaga in two generations, from I Spy to I Cry in two generations, from I Love Lucy to I Love Loosely, from Al Einstein to Al Gore, from I Have a Dream to I Have a Scheme, from Catcher in the Rye to Ketchup on the Fly, from starlets to harlots, preachers to breachers, athletes to sexleets, Boy Scouts to Toy Scouts, Girl Scouts to Twirl Scouts, from LSD to ADD, from cardigans to partykins, from aspirin to OxyContin, from Lady Jane to Let's Get Insane, from science to lie-ins, from acorn the tree to acorn the spree, from lassie to sassy, from religion to pigeons, from eons to peons, from rapists to offenders, from cap and gown to cap and trade, from stickball to speedball in two generations. That's the story of America the Great to America that greats. That's in the author's notes, The Trickle Up Poverty. Some people have said they bought the book just for that page. Please don't buy it just for that. Because you've got to understand that he, and I say that with a capital H, is shrinking the middle class in order to create the socialist utopia of a two-class society, the ruling elite, meaning the bureaucrats, and the workers. In other words, President Robin Hood has orchestrated an elaborate Ponzi scheme to scam the middle class. You've been taken. in spite of his speeches about looking out for the little guy, you are not targeted. You are not the targeted beneficiary of his actions. He's just playing another game of two-card Monte. Forget what he's told you. It's all fraudulent. As I've always said, follow the money. Tell me, where is Obama's stimulus money gone? Do you understand yet? $800 billion of stimulus money. Well, let me put it to you this way. I'm not going to divulge my sources. I had a call today from a U.S. senator. That's right. Although I don't exist, and although I'm the underdog of the American media, and although I'm not on the Lipstick Network, I had a call today from a U.S. senator who divulged to me that of the $800 billion of the stimulus money, Obama shuffled $50 billion to Africa to cure AIDS or to treat AIDS. This gentleman assured me, the senator, he personally knows most of the presidents of the African nations, that all of them together have said there's no way they can spend that $50 billion. So where did that $50 billion go? Moreover, why did your media not report to you that $50 billion of the stimulus money went to Africa? I thought we were broke. I thought we were in trouble. I thought he inherited all the problems from Bush. I thought Bush broke the bank. And yet he saw fit to send $50 billion to Africa while he wants to cut our aircraft carriers in half. He wants to cut our nuclear arsenal by a third. He wants to cut our strategic bomber force in half. And he sends $50 billion to Africa. He wants to end NASA in our lifetime, but he sends $50 billion to Africa. My friends, you don't have to be a numerologist, a Christian scientist, or any of the other kind of things. You don't even have to be an oncologist to know America has a cancer. And the fact of the matter is, it is curable. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Tremendous callers hanging fire on the Savage Nation. And I'm reluctant to take this one, but I will. Danny in New York, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Doctor, hi. It's a pleasure. Calling from Richard Feynman Town here, Far Rockaway.
Go ahead.
My question is, as a man of science, as we all know you are, how could you believe in this stuff or give this stuff like astrology and numerology validity?
Well, it's an interesting question because many people want me to be a single entity or a single believer in rationality, for example. And while I am quite rational and I do have a good, profound sense of deductive reasoning, which I've learned all the way back through the courses in logic, which was all mathematics, and of course the theories of science and how science is done, I have found in my own life that there are strange phenomena that cannot be explained simply through a rational approach. And for me to reject these occurrences out of hand would make me less of an open-minded individual.
I hear what you're saying, but why not attempt to explain these things psychologically?
All right, so go ahead. Explain what. Let's pick a thing and explain it psychologically.
Okay. For example, the incident that happened to your friend with his starting in his foot and then spreading through his whole
body. All right, good, good, good. You even heard that story from an hour ago when he stepped on the sand and became crippled the way the fortune teller said he would. Go ahead. Tell me, explain that psychologically.
Well, have you ever heard of a man called Dr. John Sarno?
Well, what you're getting at is what, psychosomatic disorders?
Yeah. I mean, the psychology, as you know, the mind-body connection is extremely powerful. People mm-hmm. could be completely completely.
I understand the power of suggestion, and I understand that some warriors have fallen ill when they feel they've lost their mojo and they've lost a battle, lost a fight, lost a chess match. I understand that the mind is all powerful, but it's not as powerful as everything on earth. I'll give you an example. And I learned this early on when I was studying pharmacology. Let me give you an exact example, because I know many people who are trying to argue about the power of the mind as the supreme power of all. Let us go to the jungles of Brazil and let us look at monkeys in a tree. Wild monkeys jumping from limb to limb, evading the hunters who use arrows dipped in curare. If that monkey is hit with a curare-tipped arrow, that monkey is going to lose his grip on the branches of the tree, no matter what his capacities may be as a monkey who can jump from tree to tree, because curare is a muscle relaxant. And the physiology of the curare, of the reaction of the curare on his muscles, will override all of his willpower, all of his knowledge. And it's the same with humankind. I can take the strongest man on earth and give him certain drugs, and he's going to react to those drugs irrespective of how powerful his mind may be, with almost no exception. There may be a rare exception of a man who might be able to resist a certain drug, but I doubt it. I can take the most powerful man on earth and give him a certain dose of curare. He won't even be able to lift up a pencil. So, therefore, there's a limit to the power of the mind.
But, doctor, you're arguing this from a physiological, scientific perspective, meaning that the power of a physical power, no matter how powerful the mind is, it will overpower the mind. But that's not the argument we were speaking of. We were speaking of whether there's some type of supernatural power out there that could be tapped into by the stars or by numbers.
Wait a minute. There were two things operating in my story. In the one case of the fortune teller, she was using supernatural powers of which I know nothing about. In the second case of my friend becoming temporarily paralyzed, when we set foot on that beach in the Fiji Islands in the 1960s, that was nothing to do with the power of the mind. That was strictly a physiological reaction, in my opinion. She saw what was going to happen. And he accidentally stepped on a piece of contaminated coral. That's how I put two and two together. So there were two elements, both the supernatural on the part of the folk healer or the seer, and the very rational stepping on a piece of coral that caused the rapid infection. For example, you ask any surfer who may be listening to this show what a coral cut can do to you, and a very simple coral cut can easily become rapidly infected. Anyone who does swimming in tropical waters knows this. Any diver, any surfer, whatever. So, I mean, it could be explained in a very simple manner. He stepped on a piece of contaminated coral. What's the big deal? The big deal is that she was able to predict it. She somehow looked into the future and saw it. But I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think that you can have a rational explanation for an event, and you can rationally understand that there are people who have powers to see things that others of us don't see.
Can I bring up Occam's razor?
Yes, you can, but how do you account for the people that police departments have been using to help them in solving unsolvable crimes? You've seen those shows, haven't you? I mean, the cops are not lying. The detectives who were hit at dead ends will sometimes call in these people who have the ability to see. And even they are willing to suspend their skepticism and use any power that they may be able to use in order to get a crime solved. I don't think that we have to necessarily reject something that we consider to be outside the realms of rationality. Do you, on the face of it?
No, I don't think we should reject it, but I also think that we can't accept it either.
But what if a girl goes missing, God forbid, or a child, and the detectives can't find it, and they go to some seer who says, I see a red cloth, I see a barn, I see a door, I see a Chevrolet, I see the numbers N40302, I see a Pennsylvania license plate, and they track all those things together, they go to the barn, and they find the poor girl's body. How do you explain that?
They knew the numbers of the license plate?
Well, haven't you ever seen some of these stories? I've seen them on television. I wouldn't believe them unless they showed the detective, the lead detective in the case, who says, we could not believe it, but this person saw this in some kind of state of mind, and we used it and we solved the crime. Now, Danny, tell me something about yourself. Are you a religious person? Is that why you're skeptical of any of this?
I'm an Orthodox Jew.
Well, it's considered blasphemy for religious people to believe in horoscopes, in fortune telling. In fact, that's considered a martial crime. I've read the Bible on this, but there's so many other things in the Bible that you're supposed to be killed for that I think we'd all be dead if we actually were biblical absolutists.
Generally, Orthodox Jews are against astrology and.
Yes, then how do you explain that so many Orthodox Jews are such gamblers?
Well, the Jewish law is against that. They shouldn't do that.
Oh, well, wait a minute. But you're saying Orthodox Jew. What does it mean? It means nothing in a certain way. There are many Orthodox Jews who are inveterate gamblers. How do you explain it? And they also believe in numerology, even though it's a violation of their belief system. It doesn't make them bad people who should be punished and stoned to death. It means they're humans who have certain orientations. How do you explain religious people who go to prostitutes Does it make that mean that they're all hypocrites and they should all be punished and killed? It means they're human beings with human foibles. That's all.
Yeah.
It's not to argue. It's not to argue that you should use fortune tellers or go to prostitutes. But on the other hand, it doesn't mean you're supposed to die if you do.
Yeah.
Are you new to the religion, to the severity of this religion?
No, not at all, not at all. I was I became an Orthodox Jew at the age of 13, and I'm 30.
Well,
right.
I am not here to make a mockery of your beliefs, my friend. But on the other hand, I cannot support sanctimony simply for the sake of an audience. I believe at this stage of my life, I've earned the right to be a skeptic, number one, and a realist, number two. And I do respect religious people greatly. On the other hand, I also have learned to answer your question, to go all the way around in the circle. You say, how could I believe in fortune telling with such an education? But you have religious people who don't believe in science. How do you explain that? You have otherwise intelligent people who don't even believe in science. They don't believe in evolution. They don't even understand that you can have evolution and believe in creation, which we've covered on this show. I mean, we've covered the 7 days of the creation of the earth in a way that doesn't make it a fairy tale. We've discovered that a day in heaven may be a million years on earth, and that would explain the 7 days that are described in Genesis. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yep. Amps all over the headline of Drudge. Florida furor. Clinton pushed black candidate to get out. They're pushing Meek out of the picture in order to make sure Crist wins. That's right. Black people will wake up one day to the fact that the Democrats treat them as useful. Let's put it to you that way. And when they're no longer useful, and that's, of course, what Bill Clinton trying to do is pushing the black candidate to get out of the governor's race in Florida. It's all about politics. It's always been about politics. Now let's go to the last caller of this hour, Rob in Chicago. You say something happened on the election circuit today. Fire away. What happened?
I just received my letter for early for absentee ballot voting, and they sent me back the letter that said I'm no longer registered in the city of Chicago, and I've been here for 14 years. So I called
and
them
up. And I assume you're not a Democrat.
No, I'm not.
Well, in Chicago, anyone who's not a Democrat is probably considered an illegal.
Yeah, well, I can see that thought process here, living here as long as I have.
In other words, Chicago treats the non-citizen as more of a citizen than someone who was born in Chicago who doesn't vote for a Democrat. So what did they say when you confronted them?
It's getting worse all the time, too. I mean, it's ridiculous here.
So they said you're no longer registered. So wait, when you said to them, I am registered, I've lived here, what'd they do then?
Yeah, I said, listen, I voted in the last election, and, you know, I've been here for 14 years.
And did they let you vote?
No, they said I can re-register November 3rd.
Oh, my God. This is a new report out of Chicago of a Republican voter, 14 years in Chicago, being told he's no longer registered. You heard it first in the Savage Nation. One dirty gutter trick after another. Al Capone, where are you now that we don't need you? Stay in the line. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, it's getting crazier and crazier by the day. Each day, the communist in the White, I mean, the president in the White House, it just seems to devolve. He goes on a comedian show, and he doesn't even get the subservient reception he had arranged. Even a third-rate comedian put Obama on the defensive and made the president sound, well, uncomfortable. This is not a good sign. It's not good for America. Obama is desperate. You see, when even the comedians and their unknown writers turn against him, when he's willing to meet with unknown bloggers, when he's facing massive electoral defeat for his party, he will become defensive and very dangerous. Even if the Republicans can take back both the House and the Senate, which I doubt, Obama will still have vast presidential powers at his command. Remember this. He still has command of the military, command of the CIA and the FBI. He still owns the ACLU lawyers. He owns the Justice Department. And this president, backed into a corner, could do even more damage than the high-flying, overconfident Obama we've seen in the last 2 years. Please don't forget this. This is the president who said there must be a civilian national security force just as strong, just as well-funded as the U.S. military. That's chilling. But there's another possibility. Obama is now faced by a nation that opposes his naked Marxism, partly as a result of my book, Trickle Up Poverty. The independent voters who elected him because they were fed up with Bush and the Republicans, even his far-left base, are turning against him. And yet, the puppet masters of the Democrat Party want to maintain power at all costs. If this means that they must dispose of Obama, their once convenient tool, they will do so. They will get rid of him under the pretext of incompetence, and they'll impeach him. Do you believe that Obama will serve out his time, or will he resign on some pretext because Soros and the other puppet masters on the far left want to attach their strings to some other Pinocchio? I'll let the Savage Nation decide. It's not good for America in any case. Now, while this is going on, pure, unadulterated demagoguery and evil is coming out of the woodwork. There's a man named Ben Jealous. I mean, God himself couldn't have chosen a better name. Ben Jealous works with the NAACP. And this party has long been so bereft of any reason to exist. He now says that he can prove that all Tea Partiers are racist. And he says he can back this up with a report from a MacArthur Genius Award winner by exposing hate groups. I know something about the MacArthur Awards. The selections are all based upon how far to the left the so-called non-geniuses are. This is pathetic. For Ben Jealous to say the Tea Party is racist is begging the question. Well, anyway, as we said, Obama is so desperate for votes, he went on a comedian show a day after meeting only with liberal bloggers that nobody has ever heard of. Democrat congressmen are even asking Obama not to campaign for them. Obama has gone from being the anointed one to being the avoided one. I'm asking you this question. Do you think that Obama will find a pretext to resign before 2012? Oh, God, perish the thought. Water gun Biden as president.
Oh, no.
Anyway, computer experts have discovered that Iran and China are trying to hack into our voting computers. Can you believe this? How do you fear they want to change the outcome of the election? This is terrifying. And speaking of terrifying, Barney Frank is getting a strong challenge from an unknown Republican in a far-left district. Will Barney Frank end up being behind in the polls?
Okay.
Well, we should ask, is Barney Frank behind in the polls?
That's absolutely a good
That's the real question. More vote fraud was found. The Sentencing Project reports that between 1997 and 2010, an estimated 800,000 people convicted of felonies retained their right to vote, as 23 states have in varying fashions, changed their laws on the subject of letting felons vote.
That's fantastic. That's another million votes for Obama right there.
Local GOP chairman Mr. Meck says there have been multiple reports from voters within Mecklenburg County, other North Carolina counties, of voters seeking to cast electronic ballots for Republicans only to have the final review screen show votes for Democrats. Can you believe this?
Amazing.
There's more all over the country. And then a hacker, a professor of engineering at Computer Science at the University of Michigan, who knows how to hack into voting machines in the name of exposing security flaws, found out that Iran and China were originating attacks to hack into our voting computers. This is astounding, Beowulf. It's getting worse by the day.
That's the most frightening thing I've seen in the last week of all these accusations of voting fraud, is that they're actually trying from overseas to hack in. That, I mean, that's the worst.
Imagine if they put Mao Tse-tung on the ballot. He's liable to win.
Oh, God. I think we may already have a Mao Tse-tung on the ballot.
And speaking of that, why is a certain website promoting George Bush's book when it's not even out?
That's very interesting. Yeah, strange that they don't have the numbers for the book releases, but they're plugging Bush's book all of a sudden.
Yeah, very interesting. And looks like a real screamer, Bush's book. He will not talk about Obama, and he doesn't attack anybody in the book. Why would anyone want to read it? Well, I don't know. We are living in a banana republic. Now, the top 25 daily newspapers, amongst all of them, only one had a rise in circulation. The Wall Street Journal, owned by the News Corporation, had a circulation jump of 1.82%. Virtually all of the other lying leftist communist rags that have supported for 20 years now every tax increase and have biased against white males, particularly Christian white males, every other one of these rags is dying. USA Today down 3.6%. NYT down 5.5%. Los Angeles Times down 8.9%. Washington Post down 6.5%. New York Post, somewhat middle of the road, minus 1.2. Chicago Trib, minus 5.2. Houston Chronicle, minus 10.5. Philadelphia Once Inquirer, minus 5.10. No Newsday, minus 12%. 12%, a once fabulous newspaper. But it was taken over by the jerks from J schools, who were brainwashed in supporting the welfare state, tax increases for the hardworking American people, debasing police, debasing the military, attacking the Catholic Church. Newsday down 11.8%. The Denver Post down 9%. Arizona Republic minus 2.5. I mean, I go around the country. Cleveland Plain Liar minus 6.8. Seattle Times, minus 4.5. Chicago Sun-Times, minus 9. Detroit Once Free Press, minus 9. St. Petersburg Lies, minus 0.9. The Oregonian, down 4%. The San Diego Union Tribune of Communists, down 7. The San Francisco Chronicle, a once decent, never great newspaper, but decent, down 11.2%. The Newark Star-Ledger, down 9%. So where are the people turning for their news? There's no question the internet is the winner. But look, you're not going to expect the newspapers to tell you that talk radio has also been the winner, are you? Do you expect these people, who are my natural enemy, to acknowledge that I, Michael Savage, disseminate more news than most of them do? That I, Michael Savage, and my opinions are more respected and more listened to than almost all the editorial writers that I just read to you put together are? Do you expect them to say that my book is on the New York Times and other bestseller lists? Do you expect that? I don't. I don't expect that, nor should you. But if they don't wake up to the fact that you have turned away from them to get your information elsewhere, there is no hope for the American newspaper, which is a damn shame and a loss for all of us. That's right. You heard me say it, and I said it before. I grew up on newspapers. I still love newspapers, but I can't read them anymore. They're toxic. It's like picking up pornography. I can't read it. I'm offended by almost everything I see in these papers. Every tax increase supported. Support for every criminal. Attack on the church. Attack on the family. Attack on the children. I've never seen anything like this. So why would anyone buy it? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Kick things off. Here's President Obama saying that nobody in America should live in fear.
Nobody in America should live in fear.
Well, this must be a Halloween joke.
They are unsafe in their own home. No adult, no child. And no one who is the victim of abuse should ever feel that they have no way to get out.
We actually all live in fear of him and the far left ruining the country. How about something from the former Lib President's Club? First, let's listen to Bill Clinton saying we have to work harder.
People hire the Democrats to fix things.
Really?
Lots of people don't feel fixed. Record bankruptcy.
Because the Dems don't fix, they inflate now, things.
Largely for health care costs. The unemployment rate
unemployment
among young people
costs and the deficit
is twice what it is among the population over 35 with college degrees. There are lots of problems. People don't feel fixed. I'm telling you, it'll get better, but it won't get better if we turn around and do what got us in trouble in the first place. We're in a gap, which means we have to work harder.
Clinton says they don't mind the millionaires and the billionaires. That's nice. It's good that success has wisened him.
When a good country moves forward together, you have plenty of millionaires and billionaires. We do not resent people being successful in America. We just want everybody to get a fair deal and a fair shot and have a chance to fulfill their future.
But if you're successful, Obama wants to tax it away from you. Now number two of the former liberal presidents, Jimmy Carter, about the Republicans. Listen to this nonsense.
They've locked together and said we will not support Obama.
Hold it,
anything
Mr. Jimmy.
He proposes.
Obama wants all the Republicans in the back of the bus, so don't blame them for
we
being locked together.
We will not support Obama on anything that he proposes, even when we know it's right, and even when
I disagree. The irresponsibility sits squarely with the Dems who are pushing a far-left agenda.
So the Republican Party has been completely irresponsible in the last 18 months.
Thank God that we have a two-party system that will oppose a radicalization. And isn't it interesting that when you have a party that opposes radicals, as is going on here, they have the nerve to say that they're obstructionists. More from the snake charmer, Jimmy Carter.
Well, I think that after this next election, he's going to have a much better way and an obligation to present his views directly to the people to make a judgment.
Still using teleprompters?
Him and the Republican Party. But since in his first 18 months or more, the Republicans have not shown any responsibility. They've been able to snipe away at what he does.
You mean like the responsibility Obama hasn't shown to the people?
With whom to debate. Uh-huh. I think that's going to change the next 2 years. So I think he'll have a better chance to be reelected than we think he will now.
Jimmy, you didn't get reelected, and I don't think Obama will either. But I do think he took your mantle over as the worst modern-day president.
In Nevada, dirty tricks. A voter received a ballot with Harry Reid's name already checked. In North Carolina, a voter tried to vote on the machine and was given only Democrat choices 4 times in a row. All across the nation, stories are coming into us about how the Democrats are stealing elections. Do you want to live in a country that has a corrupt Venezuelan-style dictatorship? What have you seen in early voting that makes you suspicious about the tactics of the gangster Democrats? Now look, Obama is heading into midterms at the lowest approval rating of his presidency. People have finally caught on to the great swindler. Now, the fact is, while he may have done a great job of energizing his illegitimate base, every poll says he may not be able to convert any independents who have yet to decide for whom they will vote. My audience consists probably of, 40-50% independents. Currently, 67% of Americans overall have a negative opinion of Obama. One-third have a positive opinion. He is at a low trend and a downward trend, but it gets even more interesting. One-third of Democrats and one-third of liberals also give the great imposter negative ratings, as do 7 in 10 independents. 70% of independents give the imposter negative ratings, and 6 in 10 moderates give the imposter negative ratings. Many of you paid no attention to politics until now. You were too busy watching baseball or whatever ordinary people do. Or maybe there's a wisdom in not paying much attention to the lying world of politicians. I don't really know. I do it for a living, so to me it's my lifeblood at this point. But I will tell you, I have never been a supporter of the Republican Party. Let me make it perfectly clear. Michael Savage established the center in radio before others even knew what the center was. Most of the so-called conservatives in the radio have always been water carriers for the Republican Party. I have never trusted the Republicans. I still don't trust them. But I trust them more than the dirty Democrats. The dirty Democrats are the worst, lowest crooks in American history. This gang under Obama is the most dangerous gang America has ever seen. It's gone off the ken of acceptability. I filled out my absentee ballot here in San Francisco yesterday. And do you know what I did for the first time in my life? There are so many ballot measures in California, I couldn't keep up with them. And I do this for a living. The only one I was aware of was the legalized marijuana issue, which I voted against. I'm against legalizing marijuana, by the way. But do you know what I did with regard to every candidate? I filled in the R in every box. I figured, look, they're a gang of crooks like the rest of them. But at least I have a fighting chance with the R's, with no chance whatsoever, owing to the fact that the government media complex, i.e. the newspapers and TV, will always cover for the Democrat thieves and always attack the Republicans. So I checked all R's. So anyway, I want to thank you for revitalizing me, rejuvenating me, giving me faith again to go on. If God gives me the strength, I'm going to stay on the air for another couple of years right through the 2012 election. I will write another book, at least one of the book. It'd probably be about Teddy's favorite foods. I'm not quite sure what it's going to be. Teddy and I have very deep conversations about his favorite dietary items. He's shaking his chain right now. He has such a sense of timing. This dog knows when each break is coming. He knows when the end of the hour is coming. He's already looking at the door outside the studio, which if I don't get to fast enough, we're going to have a little problem in here and I'll have to clean it up. But anyway.
Savage.
Earlier, we talked about a foiled Washington, D.C. bombing plot. Very little information has been released about it in the media. Eric Stackelback has been looking into this story, and he gives us an update on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, it's always great to be here. Well, I wanted to update everyone on a report that we first discussed right here last week about this professor of English at a Pennsylvania college, Lincoln University, who publicly called for the destruction of Israel and has called the Holocaust a hoax. Now, this guy is a Muslim from Pakistan originally, this professor. He's got a long history of anti-Semitic, pro-jihad statements, yet he sits on the staff of Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. This guy is an associate professor of English. He teaches literature, and apparently, Michael, he teaches journalism as well.
What? You can't be serious.
Now, since my story first aired last week, Michael, it's gotten some media attention from the likes of the New York Times, Huffington Post. Both sides of the ideological line have been interested in it. It hasn't blown up the way I wanted it to, but it has gotten a good amount of attention in the media, which is good. But more importantly, Michael, it's gotten the attention of Pennsylvania state lawmakers. This guy, Siddiqui, Kalkab Siddiqui is his name, this professor. Now, judging by any kind of hate speech laws, and I know Pennsylvania has these hate speech laws, I'm personally against hate speech laws because I feel like they shut down free speech. But hey, if you're going to apply hate speech laws to people who say criticize Islam, then you better apply them to Islamists who call for genocide against Jews.
Exactly.
So two Pennsylvania state lawmakers, and they got some of their colleagues, I believe, to sign on to this letter, sent a letter to the president of Lincoln University demanding a full investigation into Professor Siddiqui, into his status at the school, and into his statements against Jews. Now, the big thing here, and Lincoln University continues to say this, Michael, is that Siddiqui is tenured. He's been at the school for 25 years, and these comments are made in his free time. He doesn't say this within the classroom walls. This is the point they've made. Frankly, Lincoln University's reply to all of this, or their explanation to all of this, has been pathetic and it's been disgraceful, Michael. They've been completely silent for the most part. They're talking about tenure and academic freedom while not coming out and clearly repudiating this guy Siddiqui's statements. It's been really, their silence has been deafening, and they're basically carrying this guy's water by doing so.
Sure.
And also, Michael, I think even more importantly, perhaps, the chairman of the Pennsylvania State Board of Education has also sent a letter to Lincoln University demanding answers and action. He wants a full investigation, a full formal investigation by the university into Siddiqui if he makes these comments within the classroom walls. That's a big question.
Well, of course.
If you're, in my opinion, Michael, if you're this vehement about the Jews, about Israel, about supporting jihad, then, man, you're probably, you have a captive audience as a professor. You're probably going to have a really tough time suppressing those viewpoints to that captive audience.
Right, right, right.
We don't have a smoking gun in that regard, but apparently when the State Board of Education is calling for a full investigation, this is a big deal, and hopefully we will get to the bottom of this. Now, they're also bringing up the tenure issue, Michael. The chairman of the Pennsylvania State Board of Ed has brought up the tenure situation and says, yes, Siddiqui does have tenure, and yes, academic freedom, but to deny the Holocaust, to say the Holocaust is a hoax that never happened, was invented. These are quotes by this guy, as I reported exclusively last week, Michael. The chairman of the PA State Board of Education said, look, denying the Holocaust, which is an indisputable historical fact, that calls into question this professor's fitness as a teacher. Is he fit to teach? Is he up to the task to be a teacher at a college, to engage in rhetoric, to have to hold beliefs like this? Is he competent? And that's a really interesting wrinkle to this story now, Michael, how it's advancing.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's tenure. But does he have competence and is he fit to teach? So this investigation's going in a really interesting direction now because it's getting really to the heart of the matter. And lastly, the Pennsylvania State Board of Education chairman, who's obviously the head of the education curriculum, department, what have you, in the state of Pennsylvania, is calling for Lincoln University, thank God, to publicly and forcefully repudiate Siddiqui's views. Forcefully repudiate Siddiqui's views. So we're all waiting for that to see what Lincoln University does. Their response, as I said, Michael, has been absolutely disgraceful thus far. And to me, they're complicit in their silence. Whether they want to or not, they are complicit in their silence. And they're giving this guy a free pass, a public hate monger, a radical Islamist, and a rabid anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm.
Great story, huh? But, Michael, shifting gears a bit, we're talking about radical Islam, jihad. And, by the way, I will keep you posted on all the latest developments with this radical college professor. Shifting gears just a bit, but staying, of course, in the Islamist realm, we had an arrest yesterday right near where I'm sitting here in Washington, D.C., Michael, of a 34-year-old Muslim named Farouk Ahmed. Now, he is a naturalized U.S. citizen originally from, surprise, Pakistan.
Hmm.
He's being charged with providing material support to terrorists and collecting information for a terrorist attack. Now, over the last 6 months, this guy videotaped and scouted a bunch of sites for an attack here in Washington, D.C., in the Washington area. The Washington, D.C. metro system, the subway system here, Michael, was his main target. He was videotaping these sites, scouting them out, and his plan was to carry out some kind of attack on the Washington, D.C. metro system in 2011.
Oh, my God.
Now, the FBI and intelligence agents did a sting-type operation with him, as they've done many times since 9/11 with these jihadists. He thought that these guys, these undercover agents, were members of al-Qaeda. He thought he was hooking up with al-Qaeda. So, very interesting here, and it just shows you the nature of the threat. Once again, this guy was a naturalized U.S. citizen. And that makes it so easy. There's complete freedom of movement with a naturalized U.S. citizen. The jihadists know this, and they take advantage of this.
Unbelievable.
So he went through the whole process. It was a process of months. There was surveillance, pictures taken. These guys are very patient. These aren't some rash, impulsive people, these jihadis.
Wait a minute. This is unbelievable to me.
Every case I study, Michael, over the years, there's a lot of thought, a lot of planning that goes into these attacks. Now, granted, a lot of times they don't come off, and they turn out to be incompetent. You look at the Times Square bomber back in May. You look at the underwear bomber. Both of them, it looked like amateur hour, and their attacks failed. But Michael, I'll tell you, those guys, those two guys in particular, trained for months and months, and they trained overseas. The underwear bomber trained in Yemen. Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square, the wannabe bomber at Times Square, trained in Pakistan with al-Qaeda. So these guys, a lot of training, a lot of planning, a lot of preparation goes into these attacks. And, yeah, sometimes they don't come off, but I'll tell you, Michael, the law of averages, we've been pretty lucky since 9/11, but you know, eventually that luck may run out. God forbid, but it may run out, and one of these attacks is, you know, may be successful. Now, this Washington, D.C. case here shows you a few things.
Well, like what?
Number one, obviously, Washington, D.C., New York City, top two targets in the U.S. Number two, this guy was a homegrown guy. He was a U.S. citizen, very attractive for the terrorists, obviously. Number three, heavy surveillance he carried out. Number four, smaller scale attack. Once again, Michael, you and I have discussed this many times over the past several months. This is not a 9/11 style attack. This is not killing 5,000 people and changing the course of history. This would have been an attack, what this guy was plotting, against the subway system in Washington, D.C. Could have killed 200, 300, maybe even 500 people. Horrific. No doubt about it. Horrific. Any loss of life from jihad terrorism is horrific.
Well, sure. Okay.
But not the kind of history-changing attack that we saw on 9/11, and which we know al-Qaeda wants to pull off once again. This once again shows the shift in their tactics. They're aiming a little lower now. They are satisfied now with blowing up a train, with blowing up a bus, with shooting 15 people at an army base like we saw just a year ago, the year anniversary coming up, actually, of Fort Hood. So this is the new strategy for now, Michael. I'm telling you that we need to continue to watch for. I call it the chip-away strategy. Smaller-scale attacks carried out by homegrown lone wolf types. Sometimes they're connected to al-Qaeda, sometimes they aren't. Sometimes they've trained overseas, sometimes they haven't. This guy in D.C. did not train overseas, and I can tell you he was a professional guy, well-educated, Michael, had a wife, had a kid, had a good job, I believe in computer engineering. Don't quote me on that. I believe in computer engineering. Had a good job, smart guy, middle class, yet he turned to jihad. So I don't want to hear any liberal, any lefty saying anymore, because we've had so many cases here of well-educated lawyers, middle-class guys, college degrees, doctorates, master's degrees, turning to jihad. So I don't want to hear the left say anymore that poverty causes terrorism.
But that's all we hear from the left-wing media. The terrorists only attack us because they're poor and oppressed.
Many times, most times, the ideological leading lights, from bin Laden to the guys in Hamas to Ayman al-Zawahiri, they're rich, they're middle class, they're doctors. I mean, these are professional people. And a lot of times, in the West especially, Michael, we see it again and again. Every time there's a terrorism arrest in Europe or the U.S., 9 times out of 10, these guys are well-educated, middle class, college grads, young with some prospects in this country. So enough of the poverty causes terrorism canard. It's just not true. Ideology causes terrorism at the end of the day.
Thanks for the update, Eric.
Hey, Michael, thanks again. Always a pleasure.
The Obama administration told us we would be safer using diplomacy, that the terrorists would stop hating us once Bush was gone. I don't feel any safer. And as I point out in Trickle Up Poverty, you haven't seen anything yet. Wait until you see what Obama does after Election Day. It's in my new book. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, guys, let's turn to michaelsavage.com and see what's on the website. Stop Socialism. Buy your copy of Trickle Up Poverty now. By the way, I have to mention it, Beowulf. My book is number 2 on the New York Times bestseller list without any promotion. It is defying all odds, by the way, as the underdog in America's media. You know what I mean? I really am the underdog in America's media.
I can't understand it, Michael. You've had no help from junkie comedians. You've had no help from liberal bloggers. I don't understand why it's so successful.
I think it should be made illegal, frankly. I think anyone who defies the government media complex should be investigated, because there's something wrong here. There's got to be a conspiracy.
Yeah, I think so. Obama should definitely look into it after the election.
Yes, I absolutely think that he will, at least to see if he can copy the model when he writes his book after he's out of office.
Oh, God. I dread looking forward to that.
Can you imagine Obama's memoirs, what they're going to contain?
Oh, God. Who's going to want to read that?
Well, new report came out, which we have up on my website, that the Treasury Department concealed $40 billion in likely taxpayer losses on the bailout of the AIG Group.
And Paulson is hiding somewhere in Michigan with no investigation.
Jesus.
The Hill says that the midterm blowout will show 50 or more Dem seats gone. Well, that's if the Chinese don't hack the election.
Or Iran, for that matter.
Yeah. Did you hear this last punchline? Up to $1 billion in U.S. aid winds up in Taliban coffers. Our men are dying over there, and money's going to the Taliban. How could this be happening?
God, it's insane. We want to talk to them. And maybe it's going to the computer programmers who are trying to break into the system.
Astounding. Well, on a final note on the Savage Nation in this hour, the World Series here in San Francisco.
Oh, God.
All you have to do is see the crowd with the things on their head and waving things, and the ball players all look like they're drug addicts.
Jesus.
And you understand why we have Obama as president.
That's his base right there.
Yeah, trick or treat, by the way. This is a real sad story. Hawaii Fives. Remember the sequence, Hawaii 5-0? There's a guy named Dano.
Oh, yeah.
He died.
Oh.
Stage and screen actor James MacArthur, who played Dano in the original version of Hawaii 5-0, died Thursday at age 72 of natural causes. That's always, you know, that's the way of all flesh, you know. Let's see who he survived by. Oh, there's no survivors? Usually when a guy dies, survived by a wife and children and grandchildren, right?
Yeah, normally.
1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Sacramento, California. Dave, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, this is Dave in Corning, California, the olive capital of the state.
Yes.
I wanted four quick points, and I'm going to make them real fast for you. Number one, you scare me to death. Number one is you asked your listeners a long time ago before Obama was elected what scares you the most about him getting elected. And to me, my answer was the Supreme Court appointments that he was going to make.
Mm-hmm.
Number two.
Well, let's pause right there. Let's pause right there. He appointed two radical leftists to the Supreme Court. And they're laying there stealthily waiting to undermine America. We're only one vote short of communist Marxism in this country.
Right, you're right. Now, number two, your predictions. Your predictions scare me to death because 100% of the predictions you made in all the years I've been listening to you have come true. The ones that scare me the most are the ones you're making right now because I know they're going to come true.
Okay, hold on. This is good. This is good for me to hear. Okay, quickly, what predictions have I made right now about what Obama might do unless he stopped?
Oh, my God. Socialism is the big one.
Are you a man who's in business?
No. I've worked for a major airline all my life, and I've retired from there.
But you still care about the future of America because America is part of the matrix of your being, is what I'm saying. In other words, you could say, you know what, who gives a damn? I'm old enough, I'm going to live on my retirement pension, I don't care what happens. You could do that, couldn't you?
Oh, of course.
So what is it that motivates you to get up every day and fear so much for the future? Why do you care? Is it about your children, grandchildren, or the nation itself, or all three?
Probably the grandchildren and the nation. Now, number three, what I want to make here is the election in California coming up.
Oh, God.
The election in California is not an election about who the politicians are. The election is, in California, all of the state has encouraged welfare people, and they have discouraged business. And now,
yes, absolutely. And Jerry Brown is leading the parade against business and encouraging illegal aliens to flood into the state and flood into the welfare offices. Absolutely right. Jerry Brown may as well run around with a red banner over his arms.
Of course. But now, listen, the election is going to determine the population shift in California. Do we have more people in California which want the nanny state, or do we have more people in California who want a working state? That's what the election is going to...
Well, I'll give you the answer. I'm going to give you a simple answer. I recently drove up to the High Sierra, went up Highway 80. So you start out and, you know, you go through Vallejo, and then you wind up going past the state mental hospital down there, and you see where the ex-assemblymen are now on the Happy Farm. Then you go through the state capital of Sacramento. It's all still pretty flat. Then you come up to the Sierra foothills, and then you go up to the High Sierra. On the way back, you come back through the farmland of California all over again, and you know what you see? Things I've never seen before. The railroad cars The railroad cars that carry the products around the state are all tagged by gangbangers. Have you seen that? Have you seen that the railroad cars in our state are now filled with tagging by gangs? And I said to the people in my car, I said, their parents work their hearts out on the farms. The children are gangbangers and drug dealers, and they have no self-control, and they would do anything to burn the state to the ground. Am I wrong about that?
Oh, hey, listen. My fourth point is the Tea Party. You have encouraged me to go to Tea Party meetings here in Corning, California, which are every Thursday at the Senior Center at 6 p.m. Anyway, I'm getting more politically involved because of you.
Well, Dave, I hear you, and you should go to the Senior Center. I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm sending you three copies of Trickle Up Poverty, one for you and one for each of the two communists that you'll meet at the next Tea Party meeting. I'll be listening to see what happens as a result of that. Michael Savage, we're open to crop circles, we're open to prayer circles, we're open to seltzer drinkers, we're open to oil and vinegar shakers.
Savage.